Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi insurgents fought U.S. troops at two mosques in Fallujah and held sway over all or part of three southern cities in the worst chaos and violence since Baghdad fell a year ago Friday. A Marine died Thursday in Fallujah, the Sunni stronghold west of Baghdad. That brought the U.S. death toll across Iraq this week to 40. The newly invigorated two-front insurgency raged through its fourth day and further threatened shaky Iraqi security as the U.S.-led coalition provisional authority prepared to hand sovereignty to an Iraqi government on June 30th. Under sharp questioning, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice insisted Thursday that George W. Bush fully understood the threat of terrorism before September 11th, but no intelligence foretold the deadliest attack ever on American soil. Broadcast live around the world, the hearing turned contentious as Democratic members questioned why alarms didn't ring when Bush was presented with an August 6, 2001 classified memo entitled "Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States." Rice said the document did not warn of attacks inside the United States, but she acknowledged it did reveal the FBI had 70 field investigations underway involving al-Qaeda in the United States. Commission members unanimously asked the White House to declassify the memo, whose title had not been revealed previously. The White House said it would be declassified, but not on Thursday. As the Bush administration and military commanders considered whether to send more troops to Iraq to deal with rising violence, Democrat John Kerry said George W. Bush should ask other countries for help. Kerry said the United States should engage in a bold, clear, startlingly honest appeal to share the decision-making and responsibility for Iraq. Kerry also criticized Bush for staying at his Central Texas ranch through Monday. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A Croatian woman was convicted Thursday of disturbing the peace for phoning a bomb threat to Dusseldorf Airport to get out of a vacation with her boyfriend. The woman was given a suspended sentence after admitting in court that she called authorities and, in a hoax, made an al-Qaeda bomb threat because her parents disapproved of her boyfriend. The threat prompted authorities to shut down Germany's third busiest airport on a busy Sunday in September, stranding 64,000 people for hours while police searched in vain for a bomb. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York. Have a great weekend.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Despite George W.'s recent cheerleading effort to convince us that sizz boom ba, the economy is surging and the boom is back, most Americans are shaking their heads and saying, a boom for whom? With the mass of offshoring of both blue-collar and white-collar jobs, and with the Walmartization of wages and benefits here at home, it's no longer just the unskilled, down-and-out, abject poor who are left out by our boom-boom economy, but also skilled, formerly middle-class workers. There's a quiet crisis spreading in the America that Washington and Wall Street either never visit or ignore. I'm not talking about the inner cities, but the middle-class suburbs, where even hunger is a growing problem. Food insecurity, as the jargonists label it, is up by 15% in the last 4 years. That's 1.5 million new people now struggling to put food on their tables. One soup kitchen serving 11 Connecticut suburbs says 80% of its clients have jobs. Mostly low-wage, no-benefit, Walmartized jobs. Likewise, affordable housing needs have long been ignored by both government and commercial developers, so 94 million of our people now have significant housing problems. That's one-third of the population of the richest country on earth. Worse, 40 million of us now have housing problems ranked as severe, meaning their housing is either severely substandard, severely unaffordable, or both. Housing prices go up, while most people's incomes stay flat or go down, and the affordable housing crisis mushrooms. Meanwhile, the richest among us get the bulk of federal housing subsidies. Not only do multimillionaires enjoy full mortgage deductibility on their main mansions, but also on their Park Avenue condo, their Aspen getaway home, and the summer place at the beach. This is Jim Hightower saying, if the elites continue to ignore the hard realities faced by a growing majority of us, they'll need to build mighty high fences around their own compounds.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. Tom Hartman with you live coast to coast, border to border, streaming out of radio stations across the country. Down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system and around the planet from radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org. It's been a year, right? You remember? It's been a year.
Yes.
Since that momentous moment.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Yes, indeed, folks. The president of Egypt, one of, I want to say hundreds. There aren't hundreds of world, there's certainly hundreds of world leaders, 181 nations in the world. Certainly a majority of them were in agreement with the president of Egypt at the time, prior to our invasion. If you invade Iraq, you will create 100 bin Ladens. Not to mention the fact that bin Laden wasn't there. There's no connection between Iraq and 9/11. There's no connection between Iraq and terrorism. Now we are seeing the results of it. Now I really don't want this to be let's bash George Bush. He screwed up. Now, you know, that's enough. It's increasingly obvious to everyone. Here's a quote. We are here as liberators, not occupiers. When was that quote made? 1917, by the British governor of Iraq. When Britain invaded Iraq in 1917, Ghassan Ayataya, a great roundup piece about this in the Christian Science Monitor, an Iraqi expert in the 1920 revolt, and the head of the Iraq Foundation for Development and Democracy, he said, Iraqis thought the British were sincere about it, but they proved to have other designs. This being the 1920 uprising of the Sunnis and the Shiites against the British. They point out one of the loneliest places in Baghdad is the British military cemetery, where hundreds of forlorn gravestones attest to the price of imperialism in Iraq. Of course, here now in the United States, we put them on planes and fly them back to Andrews Air Force Base and don't allow the cameras, can't have the pictures, can't let the people see that. But in 1920, there was an uprising of the Shiite. And the British, 2,200 of them died, along with 8,450 estimated Iraqis dead or wounded. This was three times the number of British who died in bringing down the entire Ottoman Empire. You'll recall Turkey was the kind of epicenter of the Ottoman Empire, which stretched all the way back into the Middle Ages and only came to an end with World War I in 1917. And this was the British staking out the territory. And the British came in and they said, "We are here to liberate you." And the people of Iraq said, "We think you want our oil." And it turned out the British did. I mean, there was no doubt about it. And, you know, they wanted to stake out this territory. And the Shiites went along with it for a couple of years. And finally they said, "Enough of this." And now we see in Iraq the consequence of the United States government going in and saying, "Okay, every business in Iraq now is for sale to the highest bidder, and nobody in Iraq has the money to buy them, so we're going to privatize Iraq." You know, sort of like they're privatizing America, right? And all these large American corporations are coming in and buying up the Iraqi assets. And we wonder, and they're not hiring local Iraqis. That labor is too expensive. I mean, they're literally bringing in people from the Philippines who will work for less. And number one, it's too expensive. Number two, of course, it's unreliable. You never know. I mean, you might be hiring somebody who's going to be on the other side. Which raises the question, why go in there in the first place? Why did we go into Iraq in the first place? Was it so that George could show that George Sr. was, you know, dumb? You know, there's a new book coming out, by the way. It'll be out in a few weeks. Documenting how George Sr. was very worried, openly opposed, actually, to his son, George Jr., going into Iraq. And you'll recall back before we invaded Iraq, Brent Scowcroft, who was the former head of the National Security Advisor for George Bush Sr. and a good friend of the Bush family, longtime friend of the Bush family, wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times saying, "Please don't invade Iraq. That is not where the terrorists are." But George, apparently, you know, he doesn't read newspapers, he doesn't read books, and so he was just, you know, unfamiliar with the history. Lieutenant General Sir Almar Haldane, British, this was the British commander. He was the British equivalent of Paul Bremer. In 1922, he wrote a retrospective on this. He talked about the vanity of what we undertook. They confiscated 63,000 rifles from the Iraqi tribes. He says the Iraqis not only rearmed themselves, but acquired weapons of a more modern type. He said it's a folly to think, not in 1 year, but even in many years, to draw the teeth of Iraq's inhabitants. Paul Risch, who's a historian, expert on Iraq, according to the Christian Science Monitor, indicates that one method that contributed to the 1920 revolt and future unrest was a British plan that relied heavily on putting pliable but unpopular Arabs in sham authority. Sort of like Ahmed Chalabi. Here we've got this guy. Everybody in the Arab world knows he's a bank swindler. He started the Petra Bank in Amman, Jordan. Loaned $20 million to the crown prince, who spirited him out of town just in time to avoid being arrested When the bank came crashing down, $600 million was lost. Where did it go? Much of it went into Chalabi's pocket. He was sentenced in absentia to 22 years of hard labor in Jordan. That sentence still stands. Ahmed Chalabi is still wanted for bank fraud. They know this in the Middle East. Where did this guy go? He comes to the United States. He says, "You'll hide me out here?" "Sure, we'll hide you out." He makes good buddies with Wolfowitz and Ben Pearl and Rumsfeld. He says, "Hey, I can tell you about Saddam. I haven't been there for 20 years, but I can tell you what's going on. There's weapons of mass destruction there. Just take my word for it." And we did. The CIA saying, "Wait a minute, everybody except Woolsey. You know, Woolsey's been out of the loop since '82, right? I mean, you know, he's like a this archaic remnant who was the director of the CIA for 2 years, and is running around talking like he's an expert. He's been out of the loop for 20 years, but everybody else in the CIA is going, you know, look out." These guys are lying to us. And so when the CIA says to Rumsfeld, "Look out, you know, the Ahmed Chalabi and his Iraqi National Congress, they're lying to us." What does Rumsfeld do? He puts him on the salary, on the payroll, gives him $20 million, starts paying him $340,000 a month in salary, and Chalabi is still getting that. And creates the Office of Special Plans, a special office within the White House, or within the Defense Department, rather, within the Pentagon, to gather information directly. We don't need those stinking CIA officers and case agents looking over intelligence and making decisions about whether it's any good or... We don't need that stuff. We can figure this out. And then we'll hand feed it to poor old Colin Powell, who's going to go before the United Nations and make a total fool of himself. I predict 1 year from today, Colin Powell will have put as much distance between himself and George Bush and Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney as has Richard Clark. You can put money on that. So anyhow, what the British did was they set up their little tool, King Faisal I. Now, the Iraqis weren't real happy about this when the British did this in 1920. There was actually he was a Sunni. See, we decided, you know, the Shia, there's too many of them. So we need to buddy up with the Sunnis. And, of course, Faisal got overthrown. There was a series of coups there. After 1958, which ended up with Saddam Hussein, who then was our buddy, right up until 1991. And it was always the Sunnis. Let's go with the Sunnis. And the Shia remember. They remember that George Bush Sr. lied to them in 91 and that 300,000 of their family members were massacred by Saddam as a consequence of it. They remember the British lied to them in 1920, 1922, when King Faisal was installed. 1933, King Faisal sending a secret memo to the British going, "Our government is far and away weaker than the people. Unimaginable masses of human beings devoid of any patriotic ideas, prone to anarchy and perpetually ready to rise against any government whatsoever, threaten us." You got to prop up your dictators. Toby Dodge at the International Institute of Strategic Studies in London says, "Bremer thought he could rule directly, but the Americans started making the mistakes. They dissolved the army, thinking they could handle security themselves." He adds, "The Americans were so clever at these policies of creating enemies and wound up uniting enemies, the army, the Baathists, and the Sunnis. So the wind reaped the whirlwind. It is an absolute tragedy. Pray for the safety of our soldiers in Iraq and for a return to sanity in Washington, D.C. This is Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I left my conscience like a crying child. Locked the doors behind me, put the pain on fire. Broken like a window, I assume my blindness.
And Welcome back. Talk Radio for the Rest of Us is the Tom Hartman radio program. In the next half hour, in about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the line a parent of one of the people who died in 9/11, who was sitting in the hearings yesterday, who was sitting there when Condi Rice said...
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Yaha. But, you know, lest our attention be diverted, Iraq is in flames. I mean, yes, the average Iraqi doesn't want this to happen. The average Iraqi, I've seen numbers, 90% of Iraqis support the Americans being there. Yeah, I think, 90% of Iraqis just want life back to normal. They really do. They're not political. They don't care. They just... I think, 90% of Americans, really, when things are going well, they don't pay attention to these things. But 10% is a pretty significant number. I mean, that's 2.5 million people in Iraq, 2.8 million people. You get 2.8 million people against you, and you've only got 130,000 troops on the ground, you've got a problem. I mean, there are some estimates that the American Revolution was fought with only 20 to 30% of Americans in favor of the revolution. And we overthrew the British, the most powerful empire in the history of the world at that time. Well, it's not just happening in Iraq. In Afghanistan, the Washington Post reports today, militia forces tied to a powerful warlord overran a provincial capital in Afghanistan on Thursday, yesterday. This isn't some small skirmish. This isn't just a little battle with the warlords who are, trying to crank out more opium. Overran a provincial capital in Afghanistan on Thursday, forcing the governor to flee. Here you've got, really where the rubber hits the road. We go into Afghanistan and say, okay, we're going to take out Osama and his guys. And by the way, we're going to take out the Taliban at the same time. Now the Taliban is back. Osama's still, here you got this 6'5" guy on a camel with a dialysis machine. We can't find him. And some 80% of Afghanistan is now in hostile hands. You don't hear the administration talking about this very much. It's not a secret. It's in the news. But, you don't hear them talking about it much. 80% of Afghanistan. The Taliban is back. They control some 20% of the country. The warlords control some 60-70% of the country. They just brought in the largest opium crop in the history of the planet, which is producing an epidemic of low-cost heroin in Europe and the United States, which is producing an epidemic of heroin addiction. When actually we had, one of the perhaps rational things Bush had done, he gave the Taliban $40 million and said, don't grow any opium. And they said, okay, fine, we'll take the money, we won't grow the opium. And they passed that on to the world. And they didn't for 1 year. I mean, you want to... I think, frankly, there's better ways to do it. But it was a start. We're not doing that anymore. No siree, Bob. It is back to opium and back to warlords. The elections, you'll recall, the elections in Afghanistan. Afghanistan was supposed to have elections, remember? They have been postponed indefinitely. Is Iraq next? It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The U.S. auto industry may lead the next crusade for a national health care system, according to remarks made by Ford Motor Company Vice Chairman Alan Gilmore. Gilmore said Ford is in talks with GM and Daimler Chrysler to develop proposals for a major overhaul of American health care. The three companies combined spend several times their profits in health care coverage on their workforce by the growing ratio of retirees to current workers.
Despite record deficits in many of corporate America's pension plans, Congress is poised to ease funding requirements for most of the country's private retirement funds. The legislation, which is expected to sail through Congress now that leading Democrats have withdrawn their opposition, will save employers an estimated $80 billion in pension contributions over the next 2 years. Norman Stein directs the Pension Counseling Program at the University of Alabama.
It's sort of an odd situation where Congress says pension funding is in crisis, we don't have enough money, and its response is to pass legislation which will further reduce the amount of money employers have to put into the pension plan.
However, the bill won't offer relief for most multi-employer pension plans, retirement funds popular among many unions in transportation and construction trades. While most unions and the AFL-CIO oppose the legislation, the United Auto Workers and the nation's largest pilots union supported it, splitting Democrats on the issue and ensuring passage of the bill.
Although he was fired for sexual harassment, the former president of Thompson Printing Company is one step closer to getting back his job, minus the actual work. A unique clause in the employment contract between Gerald Fields and Thompson requires the company to continue his compensation package, which includes 10% annual raises to his six-figure salary and a new luxury car every 4 years, if he was ever fired, regardless of reason. After three female Thompson employees complained about sexual harassment from Fields in 1997, he was terminated and the company stopped his compensation. Fields sued in federal court, won the first round, and this week Thompson lost its appeal. The three women at the heart of the harassment charges already settled their lawsuit against Fields and the company, the terms of which include no admissions of guilt. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. At the present time, at least one-third of all family farmers in the United States have no health insurance. As a small business, the family farm's simply getting priced out of insurance premiums. And with farming being one of the 10 most dangerous jobs in the country, the uninsured farmer takes greater risks. A growing trend is for one family farmer to work off the farm simply for the benefit of cheaper health coverage, which still hurts the farm by reducing its productivity.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. Bob McElvain is the father of Bobby McElvain, who lost his life in the World Trade Center. Bob, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Oop, let me turn your volume up. Hey, Bob, you still there?
Yes, I am. Can
okay.
you hear me?
Yes, I can now. I'm sorry. I had the pot in the wrong place. First of all, as the father of three grown children myself, I want to... I'm not quite sure how to say it. I'm very sorry that you lost your son.
Thank you.
It must be a very difficult thing. I can't even imagine it. I mean, it's
you don't want to go there, so
don't
even try.
Yeah, and we won't. Let's move along to what happened yesterday. You were in the hearings yesterday?
Yes.
What, you know, we had, first of all, we had Condi Rice make this rather startling comment. In fact, I just play a very quick clip of it.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
The title of the presidential daily briefing that George Bush read just before he took the longest vacation in the history of the American presidency. What was the response in the room there to that?
Well, I mean, the response, I don't know if, it was almost split half and half. It's, it's the first time since I've been going to all the commission meetings that you had a group that were, I guess, pro-Bush. Now, I don't know if that was planned or not. But normally,
it had shown up, you mean?
The whole time I've been going there, especially yesterday, you go in very anxious because for the last 2.5, since the commission, both commissions, it's like you're begging for a meaningful question to be asked because there's just so much out there. And this is the first, when they said that, because that's the first time they actually brought the title out, this has been out in the air somewhere. Oh, people can't believe that Bin Laden said this and we knew it and so forth and so on. So it was sort of a relief, right? But it's just like a tip of an iceberg. So, I didn't get my hopes up, and no one else does, because it's been, nothing's been done in since the independent commission started. In other words, the tough questions haven't been asked. But the fact that that's out in public, that keeps my hope alive now, going down next week, because it just gets very depressing that, these questions aren't being answered. And now today they said they're going to declassify. But then that's not the only thing. That's not the only question that needs to be answered. I mean, there's so many other things that we haven't delved into.
Yeah.
And
it's
amazing how they spin their words. I mean, she says, well, we didn't feel this was a strong enough indication that we had anything specific. And to me, it's startling. I just can't get over it.
Yeah, the two things that struck me as particularly mind-boggling were the number of times when she said, well, nobody told me to do anything about that. And I thought it was her job to tell other people to do something about this.
Well, her job is to give the president bad news.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that today in another show. She has to communicate with the president every day. He wasn't there for every day. He was in Florida at that time. So he spent the whole month of August in Florida. So you're right. I mean, she, no matter what happens, she's supposed to get out of the president. And I'm beginning to think that we have two people there between Bush and Condoleezza. I think they're over their head.
Hmm.
You had all these Cold War warriors in there, with Rumsfeld, Cheney. And I don't care what anyone says. Now, she kept insisting that it was on the front burners, but they definitely put everything on the back burners. I don't think they were the least bit concerned about it. And they figured it's going to happen anyway. And then, of course, they had everything in place the day after. Of course, they didn't put anything in place before. And I just don't think I just think she's over her head, or she was.
Yeah. So you think that this is really just a matter of plain old fashioned incompetence?
I won't go that far, because of the people under them, who are extremely competent, and they had an agenda, which obviously Iraq was part of that agenda. I mean, that part of the rebuilding of America defense is a paper written in 2000, part of PNAC, Program for a New American Century. Everything
right.
They did the day after was exactly what this paper was all about, rebuilding American defenses. So it was just like they're sitting back, let these two just waffle their way through all this, and whatever happens, happens. But she keeps saying, well, we didn't get enough in. It's the constant blaming it on the structural problems. Well, that's so nebulous. I mean, I actually got so upset yesterday, because every time you go down there, of course, it's, we have to make sure we're protecting our country. That's fine. But the buck still stops with Bush, and to me, he failed. But we continue to talk about structural problems,
right?
And it goes on and on and on. And that's all she talked about. It was the structural problems. We didn't have enough information. Someone said to me, "You could have made a 5-minute phone call to the airlines and say, well, we do have information that there's Middle Eastern men in this country that are going to hijack planes, and if they get on and get a one-way ticket and don't have any money with them, maybe that's an indicator. Would that have been that much to do?" Not putting it on the front page of the New York Times, but the fact that they didn't give me a warning seemed like everybody in the world knew about this except for the people. So I don't know. It's disgraceful to me. I think I'm better off getting mad now, because you get in there, you think you have to be diplomatic the way the politicians are talking to each other. But he's good friends, and I'm getting more answers now by getting angry.
Yeah,
I get so angry afterwards, and at least now I'm getting quoted all around. So.
I think America is starting to get angry too.
Well, good. That's why I'm doing this, because I want America. America has to wise up. America has to go out and vote, because this is what we're getting. We're getting a bunch of lies, and And people criticize me for that. You know, they'll call me, I'm working for Curry. I'm a left-wing hate person. And I say, you know, are you crazy? I'm doing this as a parent. My son's murdered. That's all I want to know. The truth. And, you know, we're not going to get it. I mean, this man's been trying to stop this commission since the beginning.
Yeah. You said, now, you said earlier that we're talking with Bob McElvain, who lost his son Bobby at the World Trade Center. You said that the tough questions have not been answered. What, or have not been asked? What, in your opinion, are the tough questions?
Well, one, you know, why did 140 swords go leave the country? That was finally asked under Clark. Clark said, I let him out, but I didn't want to. I went to the FBI, head of terrorism in the FBI, Dale Watson. He said, I'll get back to you. He gets back to me. He says, let him out.
Now,
and the commissioner asked why. Or yeah. who let him out? And he said, well, it's obvious. Someone has to let him out from the executive branch.
Yeah, now this...
That's the end of the story.
Doesn't a lot of this stuff end up with Ashcroft?
Well, yeah, well, he's... Well, no, he... No. He would have nothing to do with the...
Well, he's the head of the Justice Department, which is the head of the FBI.
Yeah, but... In other words, yeah, but Dale Watson didn't make that call. In other words, they asked Clark... Who then ultimately made that call? So, in other words, he's saying someone, you know, of course he couldn't say who exactly. Well, I guess a possibility.
Somebody above Dale Watson, that would be John Ashcroft.
Yeah, it could have been.
It seems to me.
You know, but I think Ashcroft would still have to go higher. I don't think he could make that decision.
You mean he'd have to go to the president?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But again, you know, you don't, and of course, Jane Garvey, head of the FAA,
mm-hmm.
was head of the FAA,
yeah.
way back in May. Now they went over this. Why weren't the planes up in the air immediately? What happened to communication? These hijackers were in the air for how long and nothing was done? They're supposed to be in the air 5 minutes. If we were on high alert, why weren't they? And she fumbled her papers, said, look, I'm not, you know, I don't have all the information here. I'll get back to you, right? She comes back in January. Not one question was asked about that.
You're kidding.
So, I mean, these are tough questions.
Yeah.
August 6th.
This was all in open testimony.
Yeah. Right.
But it was not covered by the press.
Well, since Clark, it's finally covered by the press. I mean, I've been down there where they didn't even have it on the back page of the New York Times.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't been covering it at all. But, you know, because finally we have an insider, it's like Daniel Ellsberg. You know, we finally have someone who's been within the realm, then they'll pay attention. You know, I go around saying, well, that's a victim, a poor parent who's embellishing all this and wants blame. And, you know, they just look at you like you're nuts, you know. But finally... Someone within the status quo there says something, and now people are paying attention, which is good.
I mean, amen. We're talking with Bob McElvain, who lost his son Bobby in the World Trade Center and was in the hearings yesterday when Condi Rice testified. 1-866-889-8894 is our number if you have questions or comments. Sean in Kansas City is on the line, and he has a question for you, Bob.
Yeah.
Sean, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello?
Yeah,
Hello.
You're on the air, Sean.
Hey, I was just curious... I don't claim to be a political analyst or know a whole lot about, you know, everything, but I wanted to get your feelings on what you think about the Clinton administration and them being able to prevent this type of attack. Do you think they could have done any better than what the Bush administration has or has not done?
I'll tell you, this is from the
commissioner
hearings. I mean, they spent a lot of time in... Clinton spoke to the commission yesterday behind closed doors. But at the millennium, they did stop two attacks in the United States. It seems when you stop something, you don't get any credit.
I don't think most Americans even know that the Clinton administration stopped two attacks like Al-Qaeda in the year 2000,
and
in 1999.
According to testimony, he put it up on the top of his agenda. They met 2 to 3 times a week. Terrorism was the number one priority of the Clinton administration going into the Bush. Now, from January, whenever Bush was inaugurated, their first meeting January 25th, till September 4th, they met once. And September 4th was the second. They came up with a program, a 3 to 5 year program. They did not put, even though Condoleezza Rice said that they did, that was on the back burners. But they only met twice.
Yeah. Yeah, so
concerning terms.
So, you know, in answer to Sean's question and sort of in answer to the whole, kind of Fox News spin that's been put on this, that it's all Clinton's fault, do you think that if the Clinton administration policies of having terrorism as the number one priority rather than the Bush administration policy of having missile defense in Iraq as the number one priority had been continued, that 9/11 might have been averted?
I feel they keep saying that, you know, it would not have been averted. We could still have a terrorist attack in this country. But the thing is, certainly 9/11, the towers, it could have been stopped. I mean, you know, we're not dealing with rocket scientists running around the country with, you know, so converted. I mean, everybody in the world happened to know this. I mean, Germany was warning us. Russia, France, Israel, we're getting so many warnings. And as I say, at least warn the FAA. They could have still locked the doors. They didn't have to put them open. But they could at least lock the doors.
Yeah.
At least the people would have been alerted to this.
You mean lock the doors of the cabins?
Yeah.
They could have hardened the cockpit doors.
Lock the doors.
Yeah, they did that. You know, it only took, what, a month or so to do that once they decided to do it. I mean, it wasn't...
Right.
It wasn't,
I mean, so that's... And then people know that we're on high alert, that people are... I just think they didn't want to upset the status quo.
Now, a month before 9/11, they had a guy under arrest up in Minnesota or Wisconsin, in Misawi up there, who was, you know, learning how to fly airplanes without knowing how to take off or land. The FBI had this.
And again, I mean, there is no question about the structural problems. They didn't get that information. I mean, Clark said he never got that information. The FBI is just one absolute mess.
Yeah.
But... You know that's certainly there. There was two out in California that had an FBI informant living with them. That Bander's wife from Saudi Arabia, inadvertently was donating money to their cause. You know, but so you know, I agree with that. I mean, I've talked to the FBI. You know, but the thing is, it's easy to blame them because no one's getting the blame. No one's going to be held accountable. So, I mean, that in itself, yeah, you're right, that should have come into play, but it's just that it's still the president's job to get all these people together.
Bob,
what is a terrorist threat? Let's get all our, bring the FBI in. I want all the information to take a tough stand on this, but he never did that.
Yeah. Why not, Bob? Why do you think not? I mean, you've sat through the hearings. You're probably one of the more well-informed people on this. For a year now, you've been sitting through this stuff on a regular basis, listening to these people speak. Why do you think that this administration was not paying attention? And why do you think that they won't take responsibility now for that?
Well, first of all, they say they had taken responsibility. And the main premise being that his statement, and Curry said it yesterday, about swatting flies. I'm tired of swatting flies. And Curry said, well, you haven't swatted any flies. How could you have been tired?
Yeah.
And then Condoleezza Rice said, well, that's just a figure of speech. What President Bush wanted to do, that he didn't want to go after individual people. He wanted to get a 3 to 5 year plan to destroy Al-Qaeda. So it's all about perception. And their perception is we were trying. But the thing is, they weren't. You know what I mean? But you just listen to her. So it's... He says, Clark said, she says this. Clark says this, she says this. And it's back and forth now. And so the people, they'll probably still remain split. So we're not really getting definite information. And I still think it's because the people, the Wolfowitz, the Rumsfelds, the Cheneys, Abrams, and all them, they were still under that mentality that nation states are the ones that we have to worry about. They're the ones that sponsor terrorism. This little group that we're calling Al-Qaeda out there is just not a threat to us.
Well, and most
and
of these,
I think Bush believed that.
And most of these guys, I mean, like Don Rumsfeld, for example, and Paul Wolfowitz, came back into government after, working. I mean, Don Rumsfeld, his main job before he became defense secretary this time was as a lobbyist for Star Wars.
Right.
I mean, these guys were all working for big defense contractors. Now, all of a sudden, they're in charge, and we say, okay, let's have a national defense policy. And they say, well, let's go to the big contractors, and let's crank up Star Wars and suck another couple trillion dollars out of the taxpayers' trough.
Oh, yeah, and, of course, the Iraq thing. And, anybody that's listening, just go on the Internet and look at PNAC, the Program for a New American Century.
Yeah.
And Rebuilding American Defenses, which the paper was written in 2000. And everything that's said in that, even to the increase in military budget, 3.8%, this is what they did. So this is all in place. And I hate to say, on page 52, and this is a startling thing, in the Rebuilding American Defenses, it was such a radical idea back in the 90s, and still radical. And on page 52, it'll say, this is a difficult program to sell to the American public unless we have another Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, which
I mean, that's scary. Really is.
It really is. We're talking with Bob McIlvain, who lost his son Bobby in the World Trade Center, has been sitting through all these hearings all this time. Bob, in the minute we have left here, a little less than a minute, what's the most important advice that you would offer our listeners and the administration?
Well, I speak a lot. I hope I'm trying to get into high schools. I'm trying to get into colleges. I can sit here and I can actually blame the American people, and that's including myself. We talk about having a democracy here, but what, 37% of the people voted. It's just we cannot, we have to remember it's a democracy. These people are public servants, and we have to demand accountability from that. And you do that by, if they know 90% of the people are going to vote and they know where those voters are coming from, there will be accountability. But I don't think they have to worry about accountability because so many people are apathetic to what's happening around the world.
So we need to get active. We need
to me, that's the only solution.
Great. Bob, thank you very much for being on our program today. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Bye now.
Right.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New UN regulations for commercial shipping address a major problem with tiny stowaways. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Global trade and shipping has given rise to a global problem with foreign organisms that travel in the ballast water of ships. The United Nations recently adopted the first international standards to deal with this problem. Ship owners and ports will have more than 5 years to put them into practice, but these new regulations for handling ballast water will be mandatory. Ships routinely take in ballast water when they're traveling without cargo, and they dump it when they get to their destinations. The ballast water is essential for keeping the ship stable at sea. The problem is that the water is usually filled with plants and animals, and when they're released into foreign waters, they can wreak havoc on native species. Jim Corbett is a marine policy expert at the University of Delaware. Corbett says the regulations show that the international community is responding to some environmental effects of global commerce. He says the regulations set mandatory standards for treating ballast water to filter out or kill invading organisms before the ballast is dumped out. He says these are the first regulations of their kind, and if the global standards don't provide enough protection for coastal ecosystems, he says the rules allow countries to set even stricter standards.
The recognition in this treaty
that regions may set stricter standards is really very important and does demonstrate that the international community understands the nature of this global problem and its regional differences.
The new ballast water rules were adopted in February by the UN's International Maritime Organization. Corbett says ships will have 5 to 12 years to adopt treatment technologies that meet the new standards. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory. Beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And yes, Phil Oakes with his ideal... I believe it was Phil Oakes. With his idealism... We need to recapture that. You know, we really do. And it's possible. It's still out there. 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number for our program today. In our next hour, we're going to have Congressman Bernie Sanders on. In our third hour, we've got some interesting news for you. But first, Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hi. I'd like to say that document that he's talking about, and I'm reading it right now online, and...
You're talking about the Project for New American Century, the plan to rearm America that they put forward in 2000.
Yeah, Rebuilding America, America's Defenses, published
right.
in 2000 by PNAC.
Right.
This other guy puts it a different way, but quite similar. He says, quoted this article, basically, towards the end, and it's a really good article right now. I should give the source. It's by a gentleman out of, it's the Santa Barbara Independent. And the gentleman's name is David Ray Griffin. He's really a educated person, mm-hmm. and he's not a crackpot. So you can see the article on Rips.com if you want to. But if you, this one particular part, he says page 52.
Right.
It says, the document states that such a revolution in military affairs will probably proceed very slowly, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event such as a new Pearl Harbor. So there, in my opinion, is no doubt that what these people... You got to remember, Rumsfeld, isn't his middle name aspartame?
He was, well, as we talked about yesterday, I mean, he was the
right.
guy who made it
so
legal.
I mean, you know, so you have motive, capability, big money. I mean, you know, this drama keeps on.
Well, it's you know, George Bush. He said, I hit the trifecta. You know, that's his great campaign joke line. And you know, well said, Armin. He did. Armin, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Telling the truths that multinational corporations would kind of rather you didn't hear. But we got it all right here. Count on us for the real story.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives provides you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi insurgents fought U.S. troops at two mosques in Fallujah and held sway over all or part of three southern cities in the worst chaos and violence since Baghdad fell a year ago Friday. A Marine died Thursday in Fallujah, the Sunni stronghold west of Baghdad. That brought the U.S. death toll across Iraq this week to 40. The newly invigorated two-front insurgency raged through its fourth day and further threatened shaky Iraqi security as the U.S.-led coalition provisional authority prepared to hand sovereignty to an Iraqi government on June 30th. Under sharp questioning, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice insisted Thursday that George W. Bush fully understood the threat of terrorism before September 11th, but no intelligence foretold the deadliest attack ever on American soil. Broadcast live around the world, the hearing turned contentious as Democratic members questioned why alarms didn't ring when Bush was presented with an August 6, 2001 classified memo entitled "Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States." Rice said the document did not warn of attacks inside the United States, but she acknowledged it did reveal the FBI had 70 field investigations underway involving al-Qaeda in the United States. Commission members unanimously asked the White House to declassify the memo, whose title had not been revealed previously. The White House said it would be declassified, but not on Thursday. As the Bush administration and military commanders considered whether to send more troops to Iraq to deal with rising violence, Democrat John Kerry said George W. Bush should ask other countries for help. Kerry said the United States should engage in a bold, clear, startlingly honest appeal to share the decision-making and responsibility for Iraq. Kerry also criticized Bush for staying at his Central Texas ranch through Monday. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A Croatian woman was convicted Thursday of disturbing the peace for phoning a bomb threat to Dusseldorf Airport to get out of a vacation with her boyfriend. The woman was given a suspended sentence after admitting in court that she called authorities and, in a hoax, made an al-Qaeda bomb threat because her parents disapproved of her boyfriend. The threat prompted authorities to shut down Germany's third busiest airport on a busy Sunday in September, stranding 64,000 people for hours while police searched in vain for a bomb. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York. Have a great weekend.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Ooh, Richard Clark really stung the Bushies, didn't he? Clark, a longtime counterterrorism chief, recently broke silence to reveal that George W. himself, as well as such aides as Donnie Rumsfeld and Condi Rice, refused to take the al-Qaeda terrorist threat seriously prior to September 11th, instead focusing single-mindedly on Iraq, which posed no threat to the U.S. Even after al-Qaeda terrorists attacked us, Clark says the Bushites irrationally diverted our forces to Iraq. Clark bluntly says he's outraged to see Bush now using the symbols of the September 11th horrors as a campaign device, nothing attacks despite ample warnings. The Bushites have since waged a White House jihad against Clark, calling him a left-wing, Democrat-hugging, partisan sourpuss who is a disgruntled, politically motivated bureaucrat angry that he didn't get a higher job in the Bush regime, and worst of all, he's a friend of an advisor to John Kerry. So there you have it. Clark has no credibility to debate over. They wish. Clark is a registered Republican. He is a career national security official with 30 years of public service. So valued was his terrorism expertise that he was continued as a top White House security aide by Ronald Reagan, Daddy George Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Morton Abramowitz, a top intelligence appointee under Reagan, says bluntly, "I can only tell you I think Dick has enormous credibility, a first-class intellect, very dedicated, a serious player. You can't overlook what Dick is saying." What he's saying is shocking. Bush and his insiders knew that Iraq was not behind September 11th, yet they knowingly sent Americans to die there under false pretenses. Clark says, "I think for a commander-in-chief to allow that to happen is unconscionable." This is Jim Hightower saying, "The Bushites can try to smear Clark, but they're the ones with an indelible stain on them."
I wonder who this unexpected guest might be. Good afternoon.
A circus. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is more versatile flooring with Plitanium Plywood from Georgia Pacific. Unlike other subfloor materials which limit your flooring options, Plitanium allows you to use hardwoods, carpeting, vinyl, or ceramic tile. Plitanium Plywood. Build it better.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use the...
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the second hour of our Friday afternoon program. Our second hour is Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders in 1991 became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years. He has since been reelected 5 times, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Congressman Sanders, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom, it is good to be with you.
It is always so great to have you here, Bernie. We miss you on those rare occasions you don't make it. CNN just flashed a news brief that it is believed the 2 Americans have been taken hostage, along with some Italians, this in addition to the Japanese. What's going on in Iraq?
It is a really tragic situation now. The situation appears to be moving out of control. What we're seeing now is massive uprisings and discontent all over this country. Amazingly enough, you're seeing the Shiites working with the Sunnis and maybe some Al-Qaeda people as well. And I think it is rapidly turning into a nightmare that many of us hoped we would never see but thought, in fact, might happen. You know, one of the things, Tom, and you know, obviously today is not a day to be, you know, sticking out our tongues and saying, "See, we were right." And you don't say that when people are being killed all over that country.
Well, on the other hand, Bernie, I mean, isn't there an obligation to say that when people are paying attention?
So there's an obligation now to talk the truth, and that's what we're going to do today, and that's what we're going to do in Congress.
Yeah.
And there's an obligation to end this horrendous mess. But, you know, it is ultimately a real tragedy when you're seeing not only young Americans being killed, but hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Iraqis as well. And what really bothers me is almost from the very beginning of this thing, the Bush people have been wrong, they've been wrong, they've been wrong, and it seems that today they still have no clue about what's going on there. I mean, just review some of the things they told us. We were at war because there was an imminent threat against weapons of mass destruction. That's why we went to war. Well, that was wrong. We went to war because Saddam Hussein was in alliance with Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda. Well, that turned out to be wrong. When they told us we'd go to war, it would not really cost very much money at all. Well, that turned out to be wrong. We're spending now over $150 billion. When we went to war, they told us it would take a short period of time. I think Rumsfeld said 6 days, 6 weeks, maybe six, no longer than 6 months. Well, let me tell you something. 1 year later, it is likely that the fatalities that we're going to see for American soldiers this month will be the greatest that we've seen throughout the entire war. So the situation is not getting better. It is getting worse. We have now lost 649 troops, and probably four or five times that number have been wounded, some seriously. And now what they're telling us is that what's going on is just a according to Rumsfeld, a handful of discontents, handful of terrorists, but in fact, there are tens and tens of thousands of people up in arms. You're just seeing, there's a report from Reuters, that the former president of Iran, Rafsanjani, has now is supporting the uprising and hailed the Shiite Muslim militia of that fellow al-Sadr as heroic. So the whole argument that we are in Iraq as a way to fight terrorism seems to be absolutely counterproductive all over the Muslim world. Massive anger at what we are doing and creating a recruiting army for Osama bin Laden. So, the challenge that we face now is to, it seems to me, and I'm not optimistic that this will happen, but if the President of the United States has any real courage, he will acknowledge he was wrong. He will go to the international community, NATO, the United Nations, ask for help, ask help from the Muslim countries, try to work out some kind of democratic transition and get our troops out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. With the first hour of our program, I went over the history of Iraq in the 1920s. The British experienced the exact same thing. This is like replay. I mean, it's deja as what's his name, Yogi Berra. Yeah, deja vu all over again, and it's so tragic. And then you get these guys, like the Sean Hannitys of the world, going, "Well, what would John Kerry do differently?" And I think there are so many options. By the way, let me give it our phone number if people want to call in and have questions for Congressman Sanders. Our number 1-866-889-8894 is the telephone number. And elaborate a little bit on what specifically you think we should be doing.
Nothing significant is going to happen unless the international community and especially Muslim countries become actively involved in it. But in order to do that, what Bush is going to have to say is, we, the United States, made a mistake. We cannot do it alone. We need the help of the rest of the world. We need the help of other troops to keep the situation stable, especially, I think, Muslim countries. We are not going to make all the decisions ourselves. Halliburton is not going to be the only contractor. We're going to need contractors from around the world. Stability in Iraq is an international need, and we need the international community to help us. And that means power sharing to a degree that Bush has never contemplated up to this point. That's the first thing that has to happen. It's going to simply be the United States making all of the decisions, supplying all of the troops, I see a very dismal future.
Isn't a big piece of this, Bernie, that we're going to have to then say to Halliburton and the other American oil companies that are there, sorry, you may not be able to control all the oil.
Absolutely.
And we're going to have to say to the other 154 American corporations that have bought up Iraqi assets, Iraqi corporations, sorry, you may not be able to own your chunk of Iraq. We're going to have and we're going to internationalize this. And isn't that going to really cut at George Bush's political, his fundraising base? I mean, you got a bunch of big corporations.
You got a whole lot of things going on there. But if you're sitting there, people in France probably behind closed doors, rolling their eyes and saying, "Hey, we told them that this would happen." But if you're going to get, not only France and Germany and Europe and the United Nations actively involved, there has to be an absolute change of tone. And you're quite right; it cannot only be American corporations who are involved in the rebuilding. And it cannot only be the United States that makes the decisions right now. As of this moment, we don't know who we're going to be giving power to. When Bush wants to do that, So we've got a mess, and there has to be a real absolute change of tone.
Yeah, well said. 14 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Friday afternoon brunch with Bernie. Congressman Sanders, the first independent congressman elected in 40 years in 1991. He has since been reelected five times, the longest serving independent in the 227-year history of the House of Representatives. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Joe in Provo, Utah, is on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program. You're on live with Tom and Bernie.
Hi, Tom and Bernie. Thanks so much for both of you being there. Two points and a question, if I could. One, people aren't comparing this to Vietnam, and yet we've lost more people in our first year of action in Iraq than we did in Vietnam, so I think that's something that should be brought out.
In the first year of Vietnam?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
In the first couple of years,
as well, probably the first couple of years. Plus, we've had, I understand, almost 12,000 soldiers that have been wounded that people aren't aware of. And then the second thing I think is important, this is a sophisticated people. For some reason, the American public thinks that our people that just live in the desert don't know anything. These are sophisticated people. They understand what's going on. And the fact that we didn't take that $87 billion and we paid every single citizen, every one of those people, 25 million people, some money, that was $3,500 a piece for 1 year. Most people would be very grateful, and I don't think we'd have this problem, and we'd have been moving this thing along, but instead we're subsidizing these corporations.
Yeah, they would have rebuilt their country themselves.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, so anyway, it's...
So your question for Bernie.
And then the question for Bernie, which is there any chance that, I don't know, I guess you can't round up the votes to cut off the strings on this for right now until the president sets up the table and presents a plan. He doesn't have
a
plan.
Good question, Joe. As you know, the House is now on recess, Easter recess, and won't be going back for another week. But I think when we return, you're going to hear a lot of folks, and I suspect not just Democrats or independents, but Republicans as well, beginning to rethink what's going on in Iraq. The analogy to Vietnam is becoming more and more of concern. The loss of life is terrible, not only for American soldiers and the wounded, as you indicated, but for the Iraqi people as well. How do you win the hearts and minds of people when in the last week alone, just in Fallujah, 458 men, women, and children have been killed and 1,000 have been wounded? We're supposed to be liberating and freeing these people, not killing them.
Yeah, and every one of those people probably has a couple hundred,
exactly.
Has 100 relatives.
Of course. So you're seeing our allies speaking out against American military there. So I think you are going to hear a lot of thought, and one way is, of course, to use the power of the purse, which is an option. But clearly, the White House has got to start defining what the exit plan is, how they're going to change their attitude toward the rest of the world, because many of us fear that we're getting deeper and deeper into a terrible, terrible quagmire.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kodak in Charleston, what is it, South Carolina, Kodak?
Yes, it is, Charleston, hey. South Carolina.
Welcome.
Thank you. Congressman Sanders, welcome today. Tom Harmon, welcome. But I just want to make one thing perfectly clear here, that the reason why we are failing there is because we as American people fail to understand the past, which they say if you do not understand the past, you will indeed relive it. My question for the congressman is, and this question actually comes from out of the, from listening to all the different debates that they have on C-SPAN, and I listen to some of the congressmen speak and some of their questions, and I wonder, you know, for instance, in your case, congressman, you have your own way of getting information. It seems that the people that I listen to don't have any idea what's really going on, and I base it on the way they frame their questions, or if it's just a frustration on
you're talking about legislators that you hear,
yes,
Kodak?
Yes,
members,
yes,
of Congress. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me just say this to Kodak. It's unfortunately what happens is it's very clear there's a lot of politics and partisanship involved here. It will take a lot of courage from Republicans now to be speaking out loud and saying to the President of the United States, Mr. President, it appears that you are wrong. We cannot continue moving in the same direction. We've got to do things very, very differently. And it will take courage because the president, as everybody knows, is in a very hotly contested race for the presidency. And if Republicans begin to speak out on this issue in that way, it will hurt the president. There will be, in my view, Republicans will have the courage to do that. But what ends up happening, Kodak, once the president, especially now, there is a very, very tight cohesiveness within the Republican Party, and once the president makes a decision, there is a great rallying around him, and it's just very, very hard for people who are not dumb to be public and say, sorry, Mr. President, you're wrong. We've got to change policy.
Yeah. Well said. Kodak, thanks for the call. Thanks for the answer there, Bernie. I got to take a break. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Brunch with Bernie, our second Friday hour of the program, 20 minutes after the hour. Stay tuned.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
You know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
relentlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun. It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. Congressman Bernie Sanders on our program. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment, our second hour of our Friday afternoon program, 25 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Gene in East Hardwick, Vermont's on the line. Hey, Gene, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, it's good to be talking to you guys. I have two questions, bringing it sort of back to some Vermont issues. The first one is, I know that Bernie recently had a meeting regarding outsourcing,
yes.
And I guess I'm a little uneducated on the subject, and I was sort of wondering the way you guys feel about outsourcing, sort of given the poverty of the world, and, you know, sort of why is it wrong to sort of spread the wealth around, especially if we get some organization to regulate sort of the production and those sorts of things around the world.
Well, Gene, it's nice to hear you from East Hardwick. Gene, we did have a meeting in Montpelier, Vermont, I think it was a week ago, Monday, and we had about well over 200 people out who were concerned not only about the loss of blue-collar jobs in Vermont to China, but also the loss of white-collar jobs, national life jobs, to India. And, Gene, I don't think the question is spreading the wealth around. I think that the United States of America and other wealthy industrialized nations have a moral obligation to do everything that we can to improve the situation for the poorest people in this world. There are something like a billion people who are living on a dollar a day, massive poverty all over the world, AIDS, lack of education, lack of health care, so forth and so on. We've got to work very, very hard and do a lot more than we are doing to improve those lives. And, in fact, a lot of the policies of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, in fact, are working against the poorest people in the world. We've got to change that. But to my mind, what we should not be doing, and it is an absolute outrage, is to destroy the middle class of this country to try to help some poor people abroad. You can do both, but you don't have to destroy the middle class of this country. And let me just tell you something, Gene. If you think the CEOs of the largest corporations in America who are throwing hundreds of thousands of American workers out on the street and taking those jobs to China or India are doing it because they're staying up nights worrying about poor people around the world, let me tell you that ain't the case. If they were so generous, they might want to cut their $100 million stock options that they get and so forth and so on and donate it to poor people around the world. They're not doing that for that reason. They are doing it because the bottom line will get higher when you're paying people in China 30 cents an hour or people in India $2 an hour for work that is done for $12 or $15 an hour in the United States of America. So I think outsourcing is a very serious problem, and we're working hard to stop it. We're working in a number of ways. One of the ways that we are working on is that as taxpayers, we are providing many, many, many billions of dollars in corporate welfare to large corporations who are throwing American workers out on the street and moving abroad, and that is absolutely wrong. We've got to stop that, and we've got to work with those businesses who are proud to be Americans. At that panel, at that conference that we had on outsourcing, Gene, we had three local Vermont business people who say, hey, we want to do business in America. We're having a very hard time competing against those folks who go to China and so forth. Let's support the small and medium-sized businesses in this country that want to grow jobs in this country and not those big, big companies that are moving abroad.
Right. And my other question for you is I've never heard your opinion on the genetically modified food debate.
Well, okay. We are strongly against GMOs, and we play an active role on that in Washington.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Gene, for the call. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the air. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman. Yeah.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The U.S. auto industry may lead the next crusade for a national health care system, according to remarks made by Ford Motor Company Vice Chairman Alan Gilmore. Gilmore said Ford is in talks with GM and Daimler Chrysler to develop proposals for a major overhaul of American health care. The three companies combined spend several times their profits in health care coverage on their workforce by the growing ratio of retirees to current workers.
Despite record deficits in many of corporate America's pension plans, Congress is poised to ease funding requirements for most of the country's private retirement funds. The legislation, which is expected to sail through Congress now that leading Democrats have withdrawn their opposition, will save employers an estimated $80 billion in pension contributions over the next 2 years. Norman Stein directs the Pension Counseling Program at the University of Alabama.
It's sort of an odd situation where Congress says pension funding is in crisis, we don't have enough money, and its response is to pass legislation which will further reduce the amount of money employers have to put into the pension plan.
However, the bill won't offer relief for most multi-employer pension plans, retirement funds popular among many unions in transportation and construction trades. While most unions in the AFL-CIO oppose the legislation, the United Auto Workers and the nation's largest pilots union supported it, splitting Democrats on the issue and ensuring passage of the bill.
Although he was fired for sexual harassment, the former president of Thompson Printing Company is one step closer to getting back his job, minus the actual work. A unique clause in the employment contract between Gerald Fields and Thompson requires the company to continue his compensation package, which includes 10% annual raises to his six-figure salary and a new luxury car every 4 years, if he was ever fired, regardless of reason. After three female Thompson employees complained about sexual harassment from Fields in 1997, he was terminated and the company stopped his compensation. Fields sued in federal court, won the first round, and this week Thompson lost its appeal. The three women at the heart of the harassment charges already settled their lawsuit against Fields and the company, the terms of which include no admissions of guilt. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. At the present time, at least one-third of all family farmers in the United States have no health insurance. As a small business, the family farm's simply getting priced out of insurance premiums. And with farming being one of the 10 most dangerous jobs in the country, the uninsured farmer takes greater risks. A growing trend is for one family farmer to work off the farm simply for the benefit of cheaper health coverage, which still hurts the farm by reducing its productivity.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 26 minutes before the hour, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, America's congressman, in my opinion. Congressman Sanders, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay, well, let's go back to the phones here. We've got Kevin in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Bernie, it's always a pleasure when you're on Tom's program.
Thank you, Kevin.
I'm glad to listen to you. I have a question concerning my son who is in Baghdad right now. He joined the reserves back in 2001 for help for money for school. And he was activated and went over to Baghdad on February 1st, and he's in Baghdad itself. He's in the civil affairs unit. His job is driving around in the city with in a Humvee. And I just found out last Saturday when he called, because I had seen something on PBS about it, and I asked him specific questions. His Humvee is unarmored. And I understand that they're looking to armor these MVs, but it's going to take them a year to do it. I don't understand why not. I've called my congressman, but he's not any good. Mike Bilirakis, you know, but I called him anyway. I also called Senator Graham's office and Senator Nelson. And Senator Graham, I understand, is they told me that he knows about it, and he's working on this, trying to get something done. Do you know anything that's going on about these Humvees that are not armored?
What I know is what you've just said publicly. There is an understanding that many of them are not armored, and there's an effort to get them armored as quickly as possible. Why it has taken this long or why we went over there without them being armored in the first place is something that I don't know. But it is an issue that is known in Congress and people are working on it.
Yeah, okay. Bernie, we were, Louise and I were in Washington, D.C. We saw you when we were there, whenever that was. It was a month or two ago. And Joe Biden came in and gave a talk to a bunch of us, and he made the comment, and I, you know, this is my sole source for this, but he made the comment that there is only one factory in America, and it's in apparently in northern Illinois, that can any longer manufacture the kind of steel plating that is required to actually make a Humvee or any other kind of vehicle actually, you know, hard enough steel in the large enough sheets to make it armored, and that this factory is running 24/7, and because there were factories like this all over the United States that did this, and they've all been bought up by Italian and Chinese and other companies, and literally in many cases the technology taken to other countries and rebuilt because the labor was cheaper there. So we just don't have the technology to do it.
Well, I mean, I think there are two issues there. Kevin is absolutely right in expressing concern, not only on the fact that Humvees in many cases don't have the armor that they need, but there are other lacks in what our soldiers have there. In addition to that, of course, the point that you are making, which we often discuss, is the implications of the collapse of the manufacturing sector in the United States, not only in terms of what it does for decent paying jobs, but in this case, what it does for national defense.
Yeah. Kevin, thanks for that call. It must be tough having a child in Iraq.
We wish
right
you the best, Kevin.
Yeah. 1-866-889-8894. Rich in Morgantown, West Virginia is on the line, listening on Sirius Satellite. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
Happy Good Friday to you guys.
Thank you.
Tom, I think you'll get exactly where I'm coming from when I don't think a person could pay any greater compliment to Congressman Sanders than to say, "Hi, Bernie. You know, by your first name, you're a man that I feel I could walk right up to any time and talk right to you, and you're a real beacon for a lot of us."
Thanks very much, Rich.
Yeah, Tom and Bernie both, maybe both your comments. In all of this lead up to war and all of this discussion of what we need to combat terrorism and the creation of this and that agency and pouring more and more into deficits as well as more and more into spending, I have seldom heard anyone say, "Don't we have a right to expect a great deal of this protection to come from a $400 billion a year defense budget?"
That is a very good point. In other
one ever says, you know, "Well, my God, we've got a huge military out here. Doesn't that count for something in protecting our shores? It's just create new this and create new that." Right. But no one ever mentions this military.
Okay. And of course, military spending has gone up very substantially, and there is one of the reasons I voted against the defense budget bill is it's precisely what you are saying. We want to focus on terrorism, and a lot of that money is being spent, you know, to fight the war against the Soviet Union, which is long over. The other point that interests me, Rich, I don't know if you've noticed this, but, you know, we had the tragedy last week where those four American contractors were killed and mutilated and so forth, and it came out that that company there was paying folks $1,000 a day to protect the top leadership, American leadership in Iraq. And one wonders how the average GI in Iraq is feeling now. There are, as I think we all know, many folks in the military are underpaid. Some of them are on food stamps. Some of them can't get daycare for their kids. And yet somehow within our own $400 billion military budget and the hundreds of thousands of people we have in the military, we can't find, presumably, a group of folks who are competent enough to protect Mr. Bremer and others. And we have to pay $1,000 a day to individuals who work for a private company.
A third of $1 million a year we are paying to mercenaries, essentially.
And what bothers me about that is it's really not only the money, and that's half of it, it is an insult to the United States military.
Yeah.
Do we not believe that we have people who can be competent enough to do that kind of work?
But see, it's consistent with the conservative mindset that anything that can be done is better done by a private corporation.
That's right.
that can generate profits and give some of those profits back to politicians.
And it's but in this case, it's a direct insult to the men and women who are in the military, because
yeah.
what they are saying is you guys are not sharp enough, are not capable enough to provide high level security. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I think certainly within the ranks of the U.S. military, we have folks who could do that and are not going to be paid $1,000 a day. So I think what bothers me is not just the money, but the insult to the men and women who are in the military.
Yeah, the second largest military force in Iraq at some 15,000, nobody knows the exact number, but the minimum estimates are 15,000 people, is the private army. The private army, corporate private army, that is protecting by and large the oil fields and is owned by Ahmed Chalabi. Of all things.
Huh.
I don't have the name of it right in front of me, but we did a show on it last week. And he owns a private army which provides oil field security, more than 15,000 employees. All of them make more than our military, and it's paid for by our Department of Defense. It's just mind-boggling stuff. 1-866-889-8894, our number. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Again, favorite time of the week.
Roy, how are you?
Bernie, do you realize that the movie The Alamo is opening this weekend nationwide? It might be a good idea for everybody that sits there and says we can just wipe these folks out to go watch that movie and see what a few dedicated folks, grossly outmanned, can do with an invading army.
Yeah.
And it's not really comforting to think about it that way.
Now, my recollection, Roy, is that we got our butts kicked at the Alamo, did we not?
That's right. Those guys got defeated.
Yeah.
But then they ran the invaders out 6 weeks later.
Yeah.
Down at Goliad,
yeah.
Or at San Jacinto. The other thing, I want to make one other quick point, and then I want to ask my question. The whole parallel to Vietnam, I've been making this parallel before we got thought about getting bogged down. The biggest parallel to Vietnam is that we were lied into this damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest parallel. And the question, Scalia is being protected by people who are being paid with United States tax dollar money. And those people will not allow people to record his speeches. Now, if that guy is going to go out and he's going to go on the fundraisers or make his political statements, and we're paying for his bodyguards, by God, we ought to have a right to know what he's telling these people.
I think you're absolutely right. I think what Roy is talking about is Scalia gave a speech recently, and he demanded that the tape recorders of two reporters be the tape be wiped out.
Yeah, not just turned off, but erased.
Right.
And he claimed that the this was announced in advance. Turned out they went back and looked at the transcripts, and it hadn't been. And Scalia seems to me like one of the most scary, arrogant people. Bernie, we got a couple more calls. I have a question for you,
sure.
Though. We did a show on the Taft-Hartley Act day before yesterday, I think. I did an hour on the history of the Wagner Act in 1935 that basically made it legal for unions to exist in the United States and started to equalize the power relationship between labor and management, or labor and ownership, let's say. And then in 1947, Senator Taft and Congressman Hartley came along with the Taft-Hartley Act, which was vetoed by Truman, and Congress overrode his veto, which basically made it possible for states to have right-to-work laws and made it possible for employers to bust unions by defining when they could call elections and things like that. And we saw unionization in the United States go from, in 1935, 25% up to 37% in 1947, and then start the decline. Right after Taft-Hartley, it started the decline. By the 1950s, it was down to 35%. Now it's at 10%. And it seems to me that there should be a really strong movement to repeal Taft-Hartley. Do you see anything like that happening in Congress?
You're absolutely right, Tom, and I think what we have to emphasize here, and I'm glad that you're discussing this issue because almost nobody does, the bottom line is that if you are a worker in a union, you will make, on average, about 30% more than the same worker, than a worker doing the same work as you do who is non-union. So being in a union is a good thing, and you make a lot more money than people who are not in unions. There is no question right now, especially under Bush, but before him, that the National Labor Relations Act, as it currently stands, makes it very, very difficult for workers to organize. All of the benefits are on the side of the employer in a dozen different ways. And in fact, as you may know, Tom, a lot of unions now have given up even going through the NLRB and are now basically going to the community for support and making an offer to the employer that they can't lose.
Right, and this is all because of Taft-Hartley.
So that's right. That's right. So to answer your question, yes, absolutely. I introduced legislation some years ago which, among other things, would say that in a shop, when you had 50% of the workers plus one who signed cards indicating they wanted to belong to a union, that in fact they would belong to the union. That was it. They didn't have to go through the election. They didn't have to go through the backroom stuff where the employer could browbeat workers with anti-union propaganda. The AFL-CIO now is, in fact, becoming more focused on this issue, and they understand that under the current playing rules of the game, they're going to lose almost every single time. So, yeah, we want to repeal Taft-Hartley, but we also want legislation in the very near future which makes it easier for workers to be able to join unions.
Right, which would restore the original provisions of the Wagner Act of 1935.
I mean, the bottom line is, if a group of people choose to come together to form a union, they should be able to do so without having to be beaten over the head, without having to see their organizers being fired for all, you know, trumped-up reasons. It's a very bad situation.
Yeah, because ultimately it is about power. I mean, it is about if we can equate, you know, we the people through government, we set the rules of the game of business. And if we simply say, okay, the rules of the game are that labor has the ability to have power equal to that of ownership, or it'll never be equal, but has some power to bargain. I think that the middle class in the United States is an aberration. I think it's an abnormal thing in a totally laissez-faire free market economy. And it came about as a consequence of the Wagner Act, as a consequence of unionization.
Because workers had some power and they're able to get decent benefits.
That's right. That's right.
And we're losing that. And with that, by the way, and I think you're absolutely right to pinpoint that as one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons for the shrinking of the middle class and the fact that real wages have declined over the last 30 years. No question about it that when we lose the power of unions to negotiate for workers, the employers benefit and working people, not only, by the way, union people, but non-union people as well. Because if you drive down wages in union jobs, it means to say that in communities all over this country, the wage scale is lower, and non-union workers are also going to get lower wages.
Right. The union jobs set the ceiling, and the minimum wage sets the floor, and everybody, you know, falls in between. Let's get back to the phones here. Vin in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Vin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Nice to be with you. I was listening to your conversation before, to Bernie's conversation about what George Bush would need to do, which would essentially be to eat crow and ask the rest of the world for help. And it just rang so similarly to Dennis Kucinich's UN in, US out, which a lot of people scoffed at him for. And I was wondering, I believe, Bernie, you are a member of the Congressional Caucus.
Well, I helped found the Progressive Caucus.
He created it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I didn't realize that. I wondered if an organization like the Progressive Caucus is indeed trying to make inroads among House Republicans to try and pry them away from this idiotic position of sticking to the president on this. You know, I know, for example, in the Senate, someone like Judd Gregg, who's, you know, fairly conservative, just came out against the whole Mercury.
We just ran out of time. Vin, Bernie will answer your question on the other side of this break. Thanks for the question. And, Bernie, if you can stick around.
Yep, I'm ready.
Okay. And stick around. We'll answer that question. And we got David in Missouri. David will pick up your call on the other side of the break, too. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Nitrates from the Midwest are a major nuisance in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Every spring, a vast expanse of the Gulf of Mexico loses so much oxygen that people describe it as a dead zone where fish cannot survive. The problem begins when nutrients come down the Mississippi River and feed huge blooms of algae. Some experts say the dead zone would cover less of the Gulf if healthy wetlands covered more of the upper Midwest. The nutrients that cause the problem are nitrates that are used as fertilizer on farm fields. When too much fertilizer is used, the nitrates get into groundwater. From there, they seep into tributaries of the Mississippi, and then they're on their way to the Gulf. Jean Barr is a hydrogeology professor at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and she's an expert on contaminants in groundwater. She says nitrates travel easily in groundwater, and that's one of several reasons why they're a problem.
First of all, we're adding nitrogen to the landscape, and so there's a huge excess overall because nitrate is so soluble in water. And we are farming right up to the edges of streams, which means that the distance that the groundwater moves through the subsurface before it gets to the stream is fairly short.
Microbes in waterlogged soil near these farm fields will chew up nitrates and break them down into harmless nitrogen gas. But a lot of wetlands in the upper Midwest have been drained and turned into farm fields. Barr says that's short-circuited the natural processes that break down the nitrates in groundwater. Experts say restoration of wetlands in the upper Midwest is an essential part of reducing the impact of nitrates on the Gulf of Mexico. That problem is widely regarded as a national issue because it affects one of the most important fisheries in U.S. waters. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was making my way through the wasteland. The road into town passes through. I was changing the radio station with my mind on you.
All right, welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, second hour of the day Friday. Bernie, did you want to answer Vin's question?
Yeah, I think Vin raised a very good question. And the answer, Vin, is I think yes. I think that a lot of conservative Republicans are extremely concerned about what's happening in Iraq because, you know what? Bush's policy is not conservative. It is radical. Conservatives generally say that government should be limited. We shouldn't get involved in problems in the United States, let alone problems in Iraq. We shouldn't be spending hundreds of billions of taxpayer dollars dealing with problems in Iraq. So I think you're going to have a lot of Republicans, many privately, some publicly, beginning to say, Mr. President, we've got a problem here. Let's change course.
Well said. 1-866-889-8894. And David in Missouri is on the line. Hey, David.
Good afternoon, Tom. Good afternoon, Bernie.
Hey, David.
The points I'd like to make will create questions that I'd like each of you to answer from the differing perspectives.
Well, we've only got a minute and a half here, David, so let's get right to it.
It'll be very quick. Tom, from the constitutional Jeffersonian point of view, and Bernie, from the active participant of the governing body that causes and creates most of the changes in our country. First point, our defense budget is not, in fact, a defense budget. It's an offense budget. We spend the majority of it, in my opinion, in offensive activities rather than in defense of our nation.
Okay, David, I'm gonna have to stop you there because we got a minute left. Bernie, you wanna comment on that in this last minute and tell people what they can do about these things?
I think basically David is right. I mean, we have what the president will tell you it's for defensive purposes, but others would tell you that a heck of a lot it is for offensive purposes. And in addition to that, the concern is that a lot of those weaponry are being used to fight the last war, not the current struggle that we have with terrorism.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and some. I mean, you know, this is what Eisenhower warned us about. I mean, some huge military boondoggles in there. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the independent congressman from Vermont. Thank you, Bernie, for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Keep up the good work.
I'll do it. Thank you, Bernie. Thanks.
Bye.
And we'll see you next week. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. David, I'll get into your answer here in the next hour. Stick around.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi insurgents fought U.S. troops at two mosques in Fallujah and held sway over all or part of three southern cities in the worst chaos and violence since Baghdad fell a year ago Friday. A Marine died Thursday in Fallujah, the Sunni stronghold west of Baghdad. That brought the U.S. death toll across Iraq this week to 40. The newly invigorated two-front insurgency raged through its fourth day and further threatened shaky Iraqi security as the U.S.-led coalition provisional authority prepared to hand sovereignty to an Iraqi government on June 30th. Under sharp questioning, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice insisted Thursday that George W. Bush fully understood the threat of terrorism before September 11th, but no intelligence foretold the deadliest attack ever on American soil. Broadcast live around the world, the hearing turned contentious as Democratic members questioned why alarms didn't ring when Bush was presented with an August 6, 2001 classified memo entitled "Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States." Rice said the document did not warn of attacks inside the United States, but she acknowledged it did reveal the FBI had 70 field investigations underway involving al-Qaeda in the United States. Commission members unanimously asked the White House to declassify the memo, whose title had not been revealed previously. The White House said it would be declassified, but not on Thursday. As the Bush administration and military commanders considered whether to send more troops to Iraq to deal with rising violence, Democrat John Kerry said George W. Bush should ask other countries for help. Curry said the United States should engage in a bold, clear, startlingly honest appeal to share the decision-making and responsibility for Iraq. Curry also criticized Bush for staying at his Central Texas ranch through Monday. More news after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
A Croatian woman was convicted Thursday of disturbing the peace for phoning a bomb threat to Dusseldorf Airport to get out of a vacation with her boyfriend. The woman was given a suspended sentence after admitting in court that she called authorities and, in a hoax, made an al-Qaeda bomb threat because her parents disapproved of her boyfriend. The threat prompted authorities to shut down Germany's third busiest airport on a busy Sunday in September, stranding 64,000 people for hours while police searched in vain for a bomb. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York. Have a great weekend.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
It's always good to get reassurances from high government officials on issues of great concern to the people. Take the nagging issue of U.S. corporations offshoring hundreds of thousands of well-paying high-tech jobs out of our country, the very jobs we were told would be our people's ticket into the middle class. But now, the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, IBM, and the rest are shipping these engineering and programming jobs off to India, Russia, and other locales where they can pay a third or a fourth or even a tenth of the middle-class pay scale in the U.S. Hey, they say, America's a great place, but we're going to go where we can fatten our bottom lines. This self-serving betrayal of America's middle class has, to put it nicely, annoyed many, many Americans. This is where Colin Powell steps in. Bush's Secretary of State recently sought to reassure the people on this issue of offshoring. Unfortunately, the people he reassured were in India. On a recent trip there, he promised that the Bushites would do nothing to stop the outsourcing of U.S. high-tech jobs to India and, indeed, would oppose all congressional efforts to stop it. He even posed as an economic philosopher, declaring that, quote, outsourcing is a natural effect of the global economic system, adding adamantly that you're not going to eliminate outsourcing. Well, we're certainly not going to eliminate it if our government won't fight for our people. Oh, but Powell said, while these kinds of dislocations will take place, the Bushites plan to train the American people for new jobs. What new jobs exactly? He didn't say. He didn't have a clue. But Bush's Labor Department knows. It lists 30 job categories that will have the greatest growth between now and 2010. Number one, fast food workers. Two-thirds of their growth jobs pay less than $20,000 a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, forget high tech. Colin Powell envisions you in a hairnet.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I wonder who that is. What can I do you for?
A yodeler. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a sturdy, firm floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Floors made with Plitanium plywood are stiffer and more versatile than floors made with other subflooring materials. Plitanium plywood. Built.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 7 minutes past the hour. Condi Rice testifying yesterday. Want to get into some of that? We've got a pile of stuff here. Tony from Waukegan, Illinois, has been patiently waiting. Tony called before the last break. Tony, thanks for sticking around. What's on your mind?
Hey, I had a question. Speaking of Condi Rice, I was listening to some of the local conservative blather here that they call talk radio. And they're talking up this noise like somehow or other the Republicans are the true, how can I say this, socially conscious people. In other words, what do you mean? How dare they try and tear down a black woman because she's in a position of power?
Yeah, this was...
This is just amazing to me, you know?
I know. This smear started. Bob Novak and there was one other guy on the right who both said it within an hour of each other, right after Dick Clark spoke. They said, well, he just, you know, Dick Clark can't handle a black woman being his boss. And I don't remember who the other one. Bob Novak was one. I don't recall who the other one was. And I think it was one of the faux news commentators. And it's, yeah, it's welcome to the wonderful world of spin, Tony.
Well, that's just amazing to me. I mean, you know, here they are they're trying to discriminate against gay people. You know, they've actively fielded just in the last year. Trying to get the Supreme Court to rule against affirmative action and all these things, and somehow they are the champions of black women everywhere.
Yeah,
I I'm amazed. I didn't know that. As a black man, I personally did not know that. I feel enlightened listening to them.
Well, I'm sure you're just going to run right out and join the Republican Party, aren't you?
Oh, you betcha. And there's another thing I wanted to ask you about. I teach every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can't listen to your show in the middle of the day. So I haven't been able to listen lately. Have you talked at all about what might happen in America's educational system if Bush is reelected?
Well, it's going down the toilet fast and has been for some time. And by the way, there are archives of our program on the internet at whiterosesociety.org. You can find them. You go to tomhartman.com and there's a link to them. So you can listen to any show, anytime. We have a 3-week archive on there. But I haven't done a whole show on it. And it's really a good topic. It really is. The No Child Left Behind Act, we did a show on it, 4 or 5 months ago. Jim Jeffords, when this thing was being passed, he's my senator here, and I went down to his office and talked with his head aide for educational issues, and this was just before he left the Republican Party, largely over this issue. And they had just commissioned, there's an arm of Congress, it's called the Congressional Research Service, I believe, and this group within Congress just does studies for members of Congress. Now, there's a public can't come in and say, hey, would you check something out? And they did a study, the No Child Left Behind Act, and you know what the impact of it was going to be. And there are two things that they pointed out. One, the testing provisions and the standards provisions basically says that if your school district doesn't meet, you know, it's like this idea of competition being a good thing for education, that if your school district doesn't meet the standards of the test or does more poorly than other school districts around you, you lose funding. So, in other words, those school districts that are in areas where you have, because generally you have educational challenges following economic challenges. So in those school districts that are in poorer areas where the kids are not necessarily doing as well, their parents aren't hiring tutors, whatever, those schools are actually going to lose funding. And they are. And, you know, funding is being slashed for them. So they made that point. And then the second point that they made that I thought was particularly interesting was that the main beneficiaries of the No Child Left Behind Act were the corporations, the private corporations. Neil Bush is the owner of one of them, by the way, the president's brother, who sell tests to schools.
Oh, yeah.
The tests, I mean, if you're a teacher, you know this. The tests that you pass out, back when I was a kid, you know, the teacher would take it, she'd write up her own test, and she'd run it off on the mimeograph machine, you know, those old kind of purpley things. And,
oh, sure.
And pass them out, and we'd do the test. But now they buy tests from private corporations, and, of course, it costs the corporation 2, 3, 5 cents maybe to print the thing. But because it's copyrighted, they can sell it for, what, you know, $10, $20, $30. And the largest testing corporation in America went from being a $400 million corporation the year before No Child Left Behind to being an $800 million corporation the year after, simply because of added demand from that. And three or four other large testing corporations became real significant players. And these corporations are donors to the political parties. So,
well, yeah. let me clarify something, I think, for you there, Tom.
Hmm.
The testing that you're mentioning there, the testing that you're talking about with the mimeograph and Euroday,
right?
That was just regular old, you know, classroom content testing. You know,
right.
That's what I do now. That's what most of us do. When if we do use a standardized test, it comes from, you know, the textbook publishers. That's not the kind of thing you're talking about, I think. I think you're talking about, you know, the people who are doing the standardized testing,
right,
for,
yeah,
these, you know, for these the high stakes testing.
Yeah, and when I was a kid, I mean, we did. I think we did that once every 3 or 4 years, and it was not to grade the schools, and it was not to grade the teachers. You know, it was to find out what was going on with the kids.
Oh yeah. Well, now it's totally changed. I mean, you know, the kids are under intense pressure. You know, many of us teachers, all of us teachers, are under intense pressure. Administrators are under the pressure. You know, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, you get these phone calls from people wondering, okay, why is it our school is underperforming? You know, and then you try and explain, well, it's because we don't have money for this, we don't have the resources for that, you know, we can't control the social factors outside the school, you know, that so many of the kids are dealing with these days. And yet, of course, you know, none of that comes across in the paper. And, of course, we try to get that across through our local media, but, of course, it's just a feeding frenzy for them.
Yeah, yeah. And then on top of that, these guys are using this thing to try and say, well, it's all the national education. It's the union's fault. We can't have unionized people teaching our children, heaven forbid.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm gladly a member of a terrorist organization in the form of the Illinois Association of Federation of Teachers.
Yeah. Well, good for you, Tony. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And thanks for bringing up the topic. Do good. 1-866-889-8894. Walmart stores said on Wednesday that you got this, right? The Walmart paid, you know, some 200, well, they paid $12 an hour to get people to, which is more than they pay their employees by and large, to get people to get signatures on a petition. To put on the ballot whether this Inglewood, California, should allow Walmart to proceed with construction without having to go through the normal, gee, do the people want us here stuff. And they got defeated. Some two-thirds of the people in the area voted against them. And now they're claiming outside special interests were responsible for their loss. A Walmart in a prepared statement said it was disappointed that a small group of Inglewood leaders, together with representatives of outside special interests, were able to convince a majority of Inglewood voters that they don't deserve the job opportunities and shopping choices that others in the L.A. area enjoy. Right. They didn't identify the special interests. This is just extraordinary. It's the legislators, in response, suggested that there be a bill, legislation, that would require big box stores like Walmart to pay for studies to determine whether they harm local economies. And somebody else in England has suggested, California state legislators, had proposed a bill that would require stores larger than 75,000 square feet that sell groceries to reimburse state and local governments for the cost of providing public health care to their employees. 1-866-889-8894. Skip in Las Vegas. Hey, Skip, what's up?
Hey, man. There's an article.
Skip, I think that you've gone into outer space there. Give us a call back, 1-866-889-8894, and we can try it again. On the day after National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice's testimony, that being today, yesterday was the testimony. Happy Good Friday, by the way, to you, and if it's your holiday, and end of Passover here, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Happy Friday. Anyhow, yesterday, Thursday, Condi Rice testified, and today we are still awaiting the presidential daily briefing. The White House says they're deciding whether to declassify. We'll probably declassify. You know, it's a page and a half. How long is it going to take them? She said, no intelligence foretold the deadliest attack ever on American soil. But the Knight Ridder newspaper ran a headline that said, President learned of a plot, aide said. That's, you know, quote, end quote, that's the headline. And reported that Rice acknowledged that on the August 6th PDB, quote, President Bush was told, now this is Condi Rice. President Bush was told that Al-Qaeda terrorists seemed to be plotting to hijack airplanes. Gee. This discrepancy, the Center for American Progress points out, this discrepancy between Rice denying she or the president were warned of an imminent attack on American soil and her claims that the Bush administration were at battle stations because of explicit warnings leaves what some might call a credibility gap. Isn't it? We knew nothing about it. Oh, yes, we were sure of it, and we were at battle stations. No, we knew nothing about it, but we were at battle stations. And, you know, that's what they've been going back and forth and back and forth with this thing. And it's very strange, very strange. Chicago Sun-Times headline, Rice's answers don't resolve questions. See, the newspapers are starting to get it. They're starting to wake up. Rice suggests that the reason why she shouldn't be held responsible for this, I consider some of her excuses. That just consider for a moment, if you heard her testimony yesterday, or if you catch the sound bites in the news, you read it in the newspaper, some of her excuses. One of her main excuses was negligence, and it was her own negligence. She tried to absolve herself from responsibility by claiming, as David Sirota of the Center for American Progress says, by claiming she could not remember things or that she was never ordered to do anything about imminent threats to America. For instance, she admitted that former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark submitted a memo to her outlining threats, but then told the commission, I don't remember the Al-Qaeda cells as being something we were told we needed to do something about. Say what? I don't remember the I don't remember the Al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we need something to do about. We need to do something about. She's the top. She's the national security. She's at the top of the pile. It's her and the president. Who did she expect? It's amazing. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Condi Rice, I wasn't responsible. I was dumb. No, I don't believe it. I really don't. 1-866-889-8894. Somebody called in and wants to know why George Bush is on vacation. Good question. I'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, 15 $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis Digilink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the ToonTracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original ToonTracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.toontrackersystems.com. www.toontrackersystems.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're starting a book club, as it were, you know, collectively reading and discussing some interesting books. The independent thinker book of the month. Trying to find overlooked books. And the one that we're doing this month is How Democratic is the American Constitution by Robert A. Dahl. We'll have him on the show later on in the month. And you can learn more about the book. You can read a review of it that Tim King and I wrote. And also buy a copy if you're interested at BuzzFlash.com. Just go to BuzzFlash.com and you'll see the link for the Tom Hartman's Independent Thinker Book of the Month. So check that out. This is a short, easy to read book, and it's well worth it. It's a great book and fascinating. It's called How Democratic is the American Constitution by Robert Dahl. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Roberta in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roberta, welcome to the program.
Yes, Tom, thank you. I do know it's your program. I wanted to that book is it kind of ties into the subject, How Democratic is the American Constitution?
That's the title of the book, yes.
Wow. Well, I was going to ask you if Thomas Jefferson believed in both equality and liberty.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Did Jefferson believe in the possibilities of both equality and liberty?
Well, it depends on how you define them, but I'd say broadly yes.
Yeah, it's... I always
believe
in them too, but I the more I study the political philosophies of all time, the more I've come to understand that the more liberty you have, the less equality, and the more equality you have, the less liberty. It's kind of a dichotomy.
Not necessarily. I agree with Jefferson that you could have both. Franklin Roosevelt made the comment that a necessitous people are not a free people. That is, people who are hungry are not free. And the whole libertarian philosophy of, you know, throw it all to the corporations, throw it all to the free market, ultimately does not lead to equality or to liberty or equality. What it leads to is a tyranny of the rich over the poor and absolute freedom for those who have a lot of money and very little
and
freedom for everybody else.
That's where I would disagree with the fellow who said we need to choose between, a fellow who called quite some time ago, and I really agreed with his premise, but the wrong word. He said we should we'd be called either anarchists or reactionaries. And I would say that anarchy is the wrong word, because anarchy is what the rich have now. I mean,
No, there's very clearly defined rules of the game, and they exploit them. You know, there's very clear rules, clearly defined rules of the game for the wealthy in America. They don't have to pay, payroll taxes, for example.
But they don't abide by them. This administration regime is above the law, not only the constitutional law, but the...
I don't disagree with you.
Above even international law.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that, Roberta. But I would also say that the laws are set up in the United States right now, and this is something we all need to be working to change. That in a way that greatly enhances the possibility of somebody who's already rich to get richer, and makes it very, very difficult for somebody who is not rich to get to even reach the middle class.
Are you talking about the fiscal policies?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about things like tax policy. For example, if you make your living sitting around on your your butt waiting for the dividend checks to show up, you only pay 15% income tax. Whereas if you work for a living, you pay payroll taxes, plus you can pay an income tax of up to 30-some-odd percent.
Well, Jefferson really never was a proponent of a two-party system, was he?
Yes, he was. He created the Democratic Party.
More of a multi-party system, wasn't he?
No, he understood that there could only be two parties in the United States, explicitly. And he started what was called the Democratic Republicans back then and is now called the Democratic Party, which is the longest-lasting, continuously lasting political party in the history of the world, founded by Thomas Jefferson in the 1790s.
Does it ever bother you to realize that, as you did today, and you said it so often, Bernie Sanders, the longest running person in the Congress who is as an independent?
Yeah, I think it's marvelous.
That
I think
is
we
not within the two-party system.
No, it's not. And I think we need more independents. It would be great. And, you know, they're few and far between. But, you know, God bless them. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The U.S. auto industry may lead the next crusade for a national health care system, according to remarks made by Ford Motor Company Vice Chairman Alan Gilmore. Gilmore said Ford is in talks with GM and Daimler Chrysler to develop proposals for a major overhaul of American health care. The three companies combined spend several times their profits in health care coverage on their workforce by the growing ratio of retirees to current workers.
Despite record deficits in many of corporate America's pension plans, Congress is poised to ease funding requirements for most of the country's private retirement funds. The legislation, which is expected to sail through Congress now that leading Democrats have withdrawn their opposition, will save employers an estimated $80 billion in pension contributions over the next 2 years. Norman Stein directs the Pension Counseling Program at the University of Alabama.
It's sort of an odd situation where Congress says pension funding is in crisis, we don't have enough money, and its response is to pass legislation which will further reduce the amount of money employers have to put into the pension plan.
However, the bill won't offer relief for most multi-employer pension plans, retirement funds popular among many unions in transportation and construction trades. While most unions in the AFL-CIO oppose the legislation, the United Auto Workers and the nation's largest pilots union supported it, splitting Democrats on the issue and ensuring passage of the bill.
Although he was fired for sexual harassment, the former president of Thompson Printing Company is one step closer to getting back his job, minus the actual work. A unique clause in the employment contract between Gerald Fields and Thompson requires the company to continue his compensation package, which includes 10% annual raises to his six-figure salary and a new luxury car every 4 years, if he was ever fired, regardless of reason. After three female Thompson employees complained about sexual harassment from Fields in 1997, he was terminated and the company stopped his compensation. Fields sued in federal court, won the first round, and this week Thompson lost its appeal. The three women at the heart of the harassment charges already settled their lawsuit against Fields and the company, the terms of which include no admissions of guilt. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. At the present time, at least one-third of all family farmers in the United States have no health insurance. As a small business, the family farm's simply getting priced out of insurance premiums. And with farming being one of the 10 most dangerous jobs in the country, the uninsured farmer takes greater risks. A growing trend is for one family farmer to work off the farm simply for the benefit of cheaper health coverage, which still hurts the farm by reducing its productivity.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Show a little passion, baby. Show a little style. Show the knack for knowing when and the gift for knowing how. And have a little trust in us when fear obscures the
first time I asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Just listen to your common sense. It's more than enough, I'd say. 26 minutes before the hour, Condi Rice, being asleep at the wheel absolves her. Being oblivious absolves her. As America's top national security advisor, she's supposed to oversee major budgetary and international efforts to secure the country. But in one of the most telling exchanges of the day, Rice told Republican Commissioner John Lehman that she had no idea what her own administration was doing in critical national security areas. I will share that quote with you right after this call. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the air. Paul in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Good morning to you, sir. I love your program.
Thank you.
My question is, here, you know, we had the thing with Osama bin Laden. And, you know, we're having the 9/11 commission thing. And, you know, so much emphasis is being put on that. And nothing is really being said as to why did we pull out of the serious search for Osama bin Laden and put all of our resources and everything against Saddam Hussein?
Well, the reason why not is because the Congress is controlled by Republicans. I mean, it's very simple. There have been numerous attempts to launch inquiries into the failed intelligence that led to Iraq, and where did the weapons for mass destruction stuff come from? And the bottom line, it always comes back to the same thing. It's Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert are not going to allow a resolution to come out of the House of Representatives or any kind of legislation that would create a commission, and Bill Frist is not going to let it come out of the Senate. Period. Ain't going to happen.
That's sad.
Well, it's sad and it's some would say criminal, and you know, particularly with young men and women dying. I mean,
exactly.
we can investigate whether a president is making whoopee in the White House in the Oval Office,
mm-hmm.
but we can't investigate whether a president is sending our young men and women to die.
Exactly.
And it
just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, well, it's making no sense to an increasing number of people in America, Paul, and hopefully they will show up at the polls. Please
exactly.
register to vote and participate.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks for the call, Paul.
Thank
I appreciate it.
Thank you for your show, and keep up the good work, sir.
I will do my best. I shall very much do my best. 24 minutes before the hour. Condi Rice says, being oblivious. Here's her quote. Lehman asked Rice, you know, one of the commissioners, he said, were you aware that the INS, this is the folks who are responsible for protecting our borders, Immigration and Naturalization Service, he said, are you aware that INS had quietly, internally halved its internal security enforcement budget? Now, you would think that the National Security Advisor to the President of the United States would have some idea. She says, I was not made aware of that. Lehman asked whether before 9/11 she was aware that the Saudis, you know, the people who helped turn Bush Sr. from a millionaire into a multimillionaire, and the Saudis were barring U.S. access to al-Qaeda suspects. That they were holding suspects, that the Saudi government was holding suspects, suspected members of al-Qaeda, after 9/11, and refusing to allow the FBI to go over and interrogate them. Now,
I knew this. I read it in the New York Times. So he asked Condi Rice, were you aware that the Saudis were barring U.S. access to al-Qaeda suspects? She says, and I quote, I don't remember anything of that kind. End quote. I mean, I remember during the Iran-Contra hearings, a friend of mine the wife of a friend of mine, was one of the people in the room with Ronald Reagan when he was questioned about Iran-Contra. When he said, as I recall, 134 times, I don't remember. And I remember when that happened. And, and it came out in the news that he had been questioned under oath and he had said, I don't remember 130 some odd times, 134, 143 times. Thinking that, see, when you're under oath, if you say, I don't remember, it's not a yes or no. In other words, you can't be indicted for lying. There's no crime of having a bad memory. And I remember thinking at the time, pretty slick. Oh, Ronnie got briefed by his lawyers, and they said, hey, just say you don't remember. Did you cut a deal with the Iranians to hang on to those hostages to screw Jimmy Carter in the election? I don't remember. Did you pay off the Iranians for that October surprise that helped you win the election by giving them missiles after you became... Well, I don't remember. What was Ollie North's involvement in all... Well, I don't remember. What about Poindexter? I don't remember. And then a week or so later, I was out in Los Angeles and I was having dinner with my friend. He's an author, actually, and his wife, who was one of the legal secretaries in the room. And I made that comment. I said, that was pretty slick of Reagan there to pull that I don't remember trick. And she got this very serious look on her face, and she said, he really didn't remember. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, he's not there. There was still a year and a half to go in his presidency. And she said, I spent 3 hours with the guy. She said, there's no one home. He is senile. He was, 76 at the time, I think, 75, 76. She said, there's just nobody home. And, I think one of the most well-kept secrets of the last year and a half or 2 years of the Reagan administration was that George Bush was running the show because Ronald Reagan had Alzheimer's. And it was no coincidence that they let us know that, just a few days after he left office, or a few weeks after he left office, because he really didn't remember. So anyhow, we have, pardon the aside there, but here we've got Condi Rice. Maybe it's contagious. Maybe the beef supply for the White House is all contaminated with mad cow disease. I mean, interesting new theories here. Anyhow, Condi Rice asked, did you know that the INS cut its internal security enforcement budget? I was not made aware of that. Did you know that the Saudis were not allowing the FBI to interrogate al-Qaeda prisoners that they were holding after 9/11? I don't remember anything of that kind. Finally, Lehman asked whether she was aware that the Air Marshals program had been cut entirely. It had been curtailed. It had been ended. We used to have air marshals on airplanes. Well, we do again now, but I mean, this is before 9/11. Did she know that the air marshals program had been ended? This being, this is the woman who says that, two, three times a week, the head of the CIA is coming in and saying, al-Qaeda's going to hit us, al-Qaeda's going to hit us. All these people running around with their hair on fire, to quote Dick Clark. Did you know that the air marshal program had been ended on your watch? She says, I was not told that. This is spooky. Rice claimed that the president received no warnings before 9/11 of an imminent attack, and then said that the 9/11 warnings were so great that the president alerted federal agencies of a potential attack by Osama bin Laden. Interestingly, you'll recall one of the commissioners, I forget which one it was, he said, "We have interviewed hundreds of people, we've gone through thousands of documents, and nobody, nobody in the FBI says that they were put on alert. The alert was never sent out." You know, John Ashcroft, he had more important things to do. He had to cover up the naked breasts of the statue in the Justice Department. He had to put Cheech and Chong in jail. Well, not, I forget which one he got. What was it, Cheech or Chong? He had to toss these guys in jail for selling glass pipes on the Internet. How dare they? 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Bill in Gary, Indiana is on the line. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Bill?
You know, you were talking about not remembering, and it seems it must be in the RNC Kool-Aid.
There you go. the Center for a New American Century.
Because it skipped the Clinton White House, or it can't be in the White House. It's got to be something that comes out of the RNC.
Yeah. Well, the White House had their memory lapses also. They just had to do with sex.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. You know, you forget when you're in the throes of passion.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I mean, there actually was a time there when the guys and the people in the White House tried to close ranks around Bill Clinton and Stonewall,
but,
that thing. But,
you know, one of the things that I'm probably the most pissed off about of anything is how little play the Rules Committee is getting about this 9/11 commission. It is just atrocious. The bill of goods we've been sold is a actual, you know, nobody's going under oath.
Yeah. Well, that's the deal that they cut. The administration went and they said, okay, you want Condi Rice? We'll give you Condi Rice, but you've got to give us in writing that nobody testifies under oath, and that if George Bush and Dick Cheney testify together, that they can sit so close to each other that Dick Cheney's hand can go up the back of George Bush's coat, and that you promise that you will not ask Dick Cheney to drink a glass of water while George Bush's lips are moving.
Yeah, but they should have said, look, you know, we don't agree to it, and then watch the public cry go out.
Yeah, but they didn't. They didn't.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
it's...
You know what's butter in their bread.
Yeah, yeah. It's...
We just can't believe that out here, I'm a truck driver, and you'd be surprised how many truck drivers are clueless about what's actually happening. They believe in that totem gun and shoot 'em dead theory.
But it's not, yeah, Bill, I get it, but it's not just truck drivers. It's all over America. You got people who are just not paying attention. There was a CNN poll this morning. 32% of Americans didn't even know that Condoleezza Rice had testified yesterday.
You're kidding.
No.
I listened to that whole thing on serious, and that's where I catch it.
Yeah.
I was just amazed, you know, at some of the softball questions getting lobbed, and then the way she was, I mean, she's good. She sure knew what she was going to say and how to filibuster. She should go for Congress.
Yeah, well, her filibustering techniques were particularly effective. I mean, she actually shut a couple of these people down. Just, you know, it was amazing to watch on TV and actually see the expressions on their faces.
But if I can say to all the other serious listeners out there who satellite radio, whoever has, you know, has children, my daughter turned 18. The first thing I did was take her rear end down to the voting office.
There you go.
Before she got her presence, she got registered.
Yep. Yep, and a lot of states have these motor voter laws where you can get registered when you get your driver's license. If you don't have that in your state, you want to contact your local elected official and push for it.
It takes 2 seconds. It's in and out.
Yep, and very straightforward. Bill, thanks for the call.
You have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. How could Bush have not known of an imminent threat? Here, Rice and other officials, this from the Center for American Progress, Rice and other officials have said that because the president received, quote, more than 40 briefing items on Al-Qaeda, end quote, from daily meetings with CIA Director George Tenet, he understood the threat of terrorism. Okay, so on the one hand, he gets 40 briefing items. He understands that there's a threat of terrorism. But on the other hand, these same officials say the president was never warned before 9/11 of an imminent attack. No, he was never warned. Now, George Tenet says he not only warned the president, and Condoleezza Rice, but that he even warned members of Congress. And the members of Congress are, you know, they're out there saying this. Anyhow, it's a bizarre and sad situation. We've got 82 days left until power transfer. Now, to do the segue, see, now, if I was a member of the Bush administration or an apologist, therefore, I would say something, you know, to the effect of, now that, you know, we're talking about 9/11, let's also talk about Iraq. And actually, I'm going to do that, but I want to make it very clear that we are breaking this, you know, moving out of discussing 9/11 and into discussing George Bush's war for oil and re-election and crony capitalism. And we have this terrible, terrible situation now. The Shiites and the Sunnis are forming an alliance. And the last time we saw this was 1920. They got together to drive out the British. And, you know, they're sitting around saying, let me tell you what Grandpa did. Grandpa and all his uncles and nephews, they all got together and they said, we're all Muslims. It doesn't matter if we're Shiites or Sunnis, we're all Muslims, and we're going to throw out the invaders because they're occupying our country. And the young kids are sitting around going, oh, that's an idea. And George Bush has put members of our family, our community, in harm's way in the middle of this. It's Tom Hartman.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The oceans are massive and seemingly unmanageable, but an author argues for a piecemeal approach. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The world beneath the ocean is a lot like the land above it, and seeing it that way can help us figure out how to conserve marine life, according to author Rod Fujita.
While the ocean appears to be vast and imperturbable, it's really made up of habitats and living communities, just like the land is. So the same rationale applies to the ocean as does to the land. There are special places. There are vulnerable species in the ocean just as there are on land. So the same kind of conservation ethic should guide our actions in the ocean.
Fujita has written a new book called Heal the Ocean, Solutions for Saving Our Seas. He says while the ocean is an enormous shared resource, we can help it by focusing on its parts. For example, coral reefs. Many of these habitats are suffering from a phenomenon known as bleaching. They're turning white as colorful colonies of algae and other life forms die out due to pollution and warming seawater. Fujita says we might not be able to curb global warming in the short run, but he says reducing pollution, overfishing, and other stresses could help coral reefs recover.
Coral reefs, when you remove the other stresses to them, may have an enhanced capacity to cope with the stress of climate change. I've been out in the South Pacific and in other parts of the world, and I've seen coral reefs come back from tremendous natural disasters like volcanic explosions and huge storms that break off the corals. As long as we're not polluting those or overfishing them, they do have a tremendous resilience and ability to recover.
Fujita says it's not too late to save coral reefs and other marine ecosystems. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It doesn't matter what they do. All that matters.
As a condition for ending the Persian Gulf War, the Iraqi regime was required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction, to cease all development of such weapons, and to stop all support for terrorist groups. The Iraqi regime has violated all of those obligations. It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons. It is seeking nuclear weapons.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. 4 minutes before the top of the hour, the end of the program for this week. And Bob in Iowa is on the line. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I want to... Yeah, for you to help me out with a little balance here. For years, it seems like us liberals, if we wanted any information on the radio, we had to listen to these wackos. Felt like, you know, you were the only guy in the lifeboat. And all of a sudden now we have people like you, and you get this feeling that there's this tidal wave of democratic surge, and I constantly want to caution myself from thinking that this is just too good. Is it really happening, or is it me?
Well, let me tell you about it. First of all, I've been doing this show for 1 year this month. And so, you know, it's not all of a sudden. Randy Rhodes has been on the air for 10 years doing liberal talk radio. Bernie Ward out in California, I think it's KGOE. No, it's K. I forget anyway. KGOE is the station we're on. But anyhow, Bernie Ward out in San Francisco has been doing it for years. Duke Scorsich up in Wisconsin for years. Peter Werbe, Mike Malloy were on the air for years. There's a lot of folks who have been doing liberal talk radio. I've been doing radio. Yeah, I started in radio in 1968. I mean, I've been in radio for a long time, but been doing actually talk radio, liberal talk radio, if you want to call it that, for a year. So, it's not a new thing. What's new is that Air America came along and got a lot of publicity. That's new, and God bless them. You know, I think it's great. But liberal talk radio has been around for a while, and it's growing. It's been steadily growing for the last couple of years.
Has what's going on now caused a surge that I'm feeling, that all of a sudden people are waking up to what's going on?
Yeah, the pendulum's swinging back the other way. And that's you know, it's the history of America. You know, the pendulum goes back and forth. And it's happening in the media, it's happening in radio, and it's happening now. Bob, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Okay, happy Friday to you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Louise, thank you for producing a great show today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for selecting and editing our music. Thanks to our sponsors for helping us stay on the air. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up and participating. Thanks to you for listening. It's much appreciated. We'll see you Monday, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help